This is Sportsline on WRMJ and WRMJ.com.
He breaks free. He's inside the 20, the 10, the 5.
A weekly in-depth look at the local high school sports scene.
Touchdown, Mercer County. Touchdown, Golden Eagles.
Sportsline is brought to you by your local country financial representatives, Tracy Bigham, Jason Potter, and Brent Bigham, offering insurance for your life, health, home, auto, farm, or business.
Get a launch of three at the gun. No good, and the Rockets have won the game. The Rockets head back to state.
By 6140 Run in Galesburg, your spot for custom-fitted running and walking shoes, Hey Dude shoes and Birkenstock sandals, plus Red Wing and Wolverine work boots.
A three at the gun is no good, and this game is over! The Tigers have won! They're going to celebrate! Purple and gold converging on the Don Morris Gymnasium floor! Unbelievable!
By Diamond Ag, your local ag retailer supplier, built from your local specifications with locations in Alito, Alexis, and Knoxville.
She throws the first three in a row for Lockridge! The Rockets have won three state titles in a row in softball.
And by Dale Jones with Merit Auctions. If you have farmland or machinery to sell, call Dale at 309-299-6400. And now, from the Dale Jones Auctioneer Studios in downtown Lido, here's Jim Taylor and Ty Taylor with Sportsline.
All right, the sun is out, and there will be a pigskin playoff show later tonight. We're from the the Dale Jones Auctioneer Studios. What did Dale tell us a couple weeks ago? The Colonel.
He's the Colonel.
Yeah, it's based on, was it the Civil War surplus auction? Is that right?
I think so.
Open book test. All right, Dale Jones Auctioneer Studios. I wonder if he would have been running the board last night and we would have had Cardinal playoff baseball back in the day. And Jack Buck would have said, go crazy, folks, go crazy. He was probably on the board that night when we were running that Cardinal game against the Dodgers back in 1985, I believe. But good morning, everyone. The sun is out. Always an exciting time of year. Appreciate Dale Jones from the auction, our Dale Jones Auctioneer Studios. Again, our billboard sponsor, we say, of Sportsline. And we're really getting ready for an exciting night. You know, the speculation and conjecture of this. And I think for the radio station, you know, I want to say we may have been the first ever station in Illinois to host a playoff show. And it was in 1991, I think, was the first year. Because Alito, we thought, was going to get into the playoffs at 6-3, and they didn't get into the playoffs.
And John Hoshite blew a gasket live on the air.
But the way that worked, I always love John, because when we first started, how the playoff pairings were released, a lot different than they are now, where it was like an old like modem, like war game system. If you watch the 1980s Matthew Broderick movie, where you would call into a modem and they would release them. But even before that, you actually had to wait for the IHSA to basically fax them to you, and that's how they would release them. Or the one year John's brother Chuck was actually at the IHSA office and then relaying the information to us via phone. But we have a great guest today, Steve Soucy from Friday Night Drive. Basically, he gives us the playoff pairings today, and it's over at 9:30 this
morning. He'll answer every question we have or you may have as the listener about the playoff field coming up. So he'll join us right around 9:30 or so on Sportsline this morning. Really fun. We had him on last year on this Saturday morning of the playoff projections. He is the guy in terms of, you know, IHSA football playoff bracket projection. He's the guy. He's the guru. That's what I call
him. Oh, yeah. No question about it. And he gets into a lot of the 2A bracket because, of course, we're primarily covering the Rockets. We want, you know, five more. All we want is five more weeks of football, as we say. But he gets into that. And I thought it was interesting, not in terms of the north half of the bracket, but there are two big games today in 2A and 1A football that are going to impact the 1A South, because Belleville-Altoff, who's the heavy favorite to, I think, win 1A, they potentially, they have a challenge today where it's kind of maybe a toss-up game. They're playing 6A Caneland, who's pretty good.
Sounds like a 1A team playing a 6A team in week nine. Holy smokes.
What is it? They got a Oregon commit. Yeah. Who's going to lose today, by the
Missouri.
Way? Yeah. So they're, but some say it's a toss-up game. So that would knock Althoff potentially out of the number one seed in the south half of 1A. And then another big game involving 2A is Chester, who's had a great year in the southern half of the state. They're playing Waterloo Chester. I love their nickname there, the Yellow Jackets, taking on Waterloo. And that is in the south half. That could impact kind of the lower half of 2A. And then Steve will get into it. There's kind of a little bit of a gray area about what the north-south split is today in 2A. That's
really interesting. That's with Moroa Forsyth potentially north or south, where will they go? And then we'll talk with him, too, about where he's projecting Wilmington, the defending 2A state champion, of course, who really, I think, outside of Seneca last year, kind of just ran through everybody in the 2A playoffs. Of course, that's who Mercer County had to play in the first round a year ago. They're always on that 2A, 3A line. It's looked like this year throughout the season that they were going to be 2A, but as we've gotten further and further, it's more and more likely they're going to be in the 3A field. So we'll talk to him about where he thinks Wilmington will fall. To me right now, I think probably in 3A, but we know there's still some things that have to shake out today. So we'll get into all of that with Steve Soucy. Again, he'll join us right around 9:30 or so this morning on Sportsline, but we can talk, and we'll talk about the playoffs throughout the show, obviously throughout the day on the Pigskin Playoff Preview Show tonight, which gets underway at 7. Just always a fun night. I think this is probably, in terms of covering high school sports in the state, I think this is the most fun day of the IHSA calendar, at least for me. It's my favorite day.
Well, and there's no question in why it is, because there's 256 schools still alive, and that's why there's so much interest in the speculation and conjecture. More so than the final weekend of the season with the state championship games, because basically it's 16 schools that are just left, and you know those fans and some of the surrounding communities. But this is kind of the big night in what the IHSA, they've always got it right with how they do it with the playoff projections and leading up to it, and especially this year with it being the 50th year. Also, he gets into the 4 and 5 teams,
yeah, and basically, which is interesting.
Should we wait for the listeners to listen to that?
I think so, because okay, Steve does a great job. And I do want to mention, we talked about this, me and Monty did our broadcast last night. So last year, there were 6 4 and 5 teams that got into the postseason, including Nazareth, who went on to win the 5A state championship. I believe Quincy Notre Dame was 4 and 5, got in and won a playoff game. Sterling High School was 4 and 5 and won a playoff game last year, too. You know, that kind of, and he gets into it too, I think, with this about, you know, that kind of helps the argument to say maybe we need to look more at the strength of schedule in terms of teams that get in the playoffs. So that's something we'll get into with him as well. And it's, like I said, just a really fun night of playoff coverage. We'll preview our show for tonight real quickly. We'll be on at 7. The bracket reveal comes out in the 8 p.m. hour throughout the night. Well, we're going to talk with the View from the West, Greg Armstrong, in the 7 o'clock hour. Also on our panel tonight is me, you, Pat Lowers coming in, our NUIC correspondent from Fulton, and then Monty Smith will be in as well.
What a panel!
I know, we're going to have a really fun night on the air.
So John Hoshite's not going to be on tonight?
He's not going to be on. He wasn't on last year either because he was gone. But talk with Rock Ridge head coach Sam Graves. We'll talk with Rock Ridge's opponent's head coach as well. We're going to have, I've reached out every coach in the Three Rivers Athletic Conferences qualified for the playoffs will be on our show tonight, as well as Ridgewood's Pat Elder in 8-man football. So that's who we'll talk to tonight.
Great.
And we'll break down the brackets. We'll reveal the brackets. It's going to be a fun night. Again, we come on at 7. Hope you can join us tonight across the WRMJ airwaves.
All right. So can we begin with like ultimate loving positive news? By the way, I love the sign off. I was listening to Monty and you last night. Do you guys had like a 49-minute post game show last night?
It was a long post game. Yeah. Well, Coach Kenny, he did a lot with the kids post game, which he should have. So we were happy. And me and Monty love talking. So we had.
Who doesn't love listening to local high school sports on the radio when they're driving home from wherever? Right. That's what it's all about. But anyway, so I'll start. So I get to Rock Ridge last night, and Amy Dugelman gives me a packet of these thank you notes from third graders that listened to the game last week and acknowledged Coach Cook and myself. Man, that's just the best. So anyway, I love that. Love the vibe at Rock Ridge. I think the Rockets really are positioned to maybe make a pretty deep run.
I think so, too.
I think this team, I don't know, there's some moxie to this team. And I still say the ceiling's still up there to reach. And I like the established running game last night where Agent Zero, Tommy Sowards, and Jacob Freiermuth, who didn't play in the second half last week, had a big night last night, had 100 yards in the first half. So I love that. It really took care of business last night, up 27-0 at halftime. And that's, I think, everyone was worried about maybe a letdown after the win over Monmouth-Roseville. And then, you know, credit to Monmouth-Roseville then last night, went up to Roscoe Eads and blanked Newman Central Catholic 21-0. So, again, about the positive vibe with the thank you notes and that from Rock Ridge. Love social media this morning and last night as it relates to Mercer County. Loved how the seniors went out, man. That's what it's, again, love that. I love the positivity on social media. They ended the season the right way.
Yeah, they did.
So I'm so happy for the kids, that senior class. They went out that way. And, you know, let's carry some momentum into the offseason, maintain that positive attitude. And like I said, some of the different things that I saw posted on social media gives me great hope, I guess.
So we'll get to Mercer County later. Let's just quickly go over Rock Ridge's game, 48-10. Like you said, just kind of they took care of business against a Hall team that I think we knew coming in they should beat pretty handily, 27-0 at halftime. Just what'd you see? To me, it looked like on the ground. The thing I like, you said Freiermuth and then Thomas Sowards both over 100 yards rushing. I think Colin Schweigen had another really efficient game too.
Yeah, seven carries for Jacob Freiermuth, 130 yards again. Remember, he did not play the second half, was injured last week, so it's good to see him with some impressive runs. And then Thomas Sowards, 14 carries, 110 yards. And then Colin Schweigen, 7 carries, 70 yards. Again, I get a little nervous when he runs into contact, and he likes to run that way. Big kid, it takes contact. And then passing-wise last night, Colin, 11 of 20 for 144 yards. And an interception that I think, I don't know if it was ruled an interception. The ball was in the receiver's hand, and then the kid from Hall kind of jarred it loose, so officially an interception. One touchdown for Schweigen, and then again spreading the ball out last night. Two catches for Baylen Lehmans, including a touchdown reception. Landon Wheatley, 4 catches for 38 yards. Owen Steele, 2 catches for 54 yards. The secret weapon, Chase Wheatley, 2 catches, 29 yards for Rock Ridge. 18 total first downs last night, 6 via passing, 10 via rushing, 1 via penalty. So again, 144 yards passing, 318 yards on the ground last night. I think only the Orion game did they rush for more yardage. 5 penalties for 25 yards. Again, that's an area you got to clean up a little bit. And I know Coach Graves, you always pick out things in games like that. Last night they did give up a kickoff return. You don't like that. The only other points for Hall, a field goal they kicked about midway in the third quarter. Hall had about a 6-minute drive right out of the locker room at halftime. But Hall limited to just 5 first downs last night, 3 in the first half, 1 via passing, 3 via rushing, 1 via penalty. Limited to 38 yards passing and just 105 yards rushing. I tell you this, though, I do look at Hall Township's roster. They have a lot of kids. This is a team.
They're super young, too.
That has, I think, some personnel on the field that maybe they're a year away next year to maybe factor into to potentially being a playoff team. And, you know, they did beat Riverdale last week and basically knocked them out of playoff contention. And then I think the other big thing, and I talked to Coach Graves after the game last night, that, you know, with the exception of Ryan Lowell, which is a huge injury week two, they lose him for the season. They're in really good shape, I think, physically and health-wise, heading into the postseason, and that's why I kind of really feel good about that situation heading into week 10. So, you know, took care of business last night, like I said, up 27-0 at halftime, and then I think led it 41-3 at one time and finished 48-10.
So 7-2, Rock Ridge finishes the regular season. Their losses coming to Newman Central Catholic, and then Princeton, and you mentioned Colin Schweigen, and I think another great year, kind of looking at his statistics. So last night, he's over 1,700 passing yards now for the season, 17 touchdowns and 4 interceptions. He's rushed for more than 600 yards on the year. So I think, I mean, there's a chance, depending on how far Rockridge goes in the postseason, he could pass 2,000 yards for the season, which would be a pretty impressive number for sure.
Well, and then just, you know, what, 2,300 multi-purpose yards? Yeah. I mean, for a sophomore.
Yeah, that's the thing people forget. Oh, my gosh.
And then you look at, like, I've talked about it this year about, you know, some of their players that as the season has progressed, like, I tell you, Liam Steele is a big playmaker on defense.
And him and Owen are both juniors. They'll be back next year, too.
And then Chase Wheatley, as the season has progressed, as they rotate their receiving core. And then I tell you, Trevor Dye has been a difference maker. And
I love how he plays, Trevor Dye.
And the other kid, the other Dye brother, has had – I mean, their Rockridge's defense has been stout all year. And they have, you know – and sometimes we take for granted – you don't mention Landon Bull all the time because you just take for granted how good he is. I mean, the amount of playmakers Rockridge has on the defensive side of the ball is just wow. And then
– And McKeag.
Yeah.
Wheatley.
Up front. And then, you know, Owen Steele defensively last night against the run game of Spring Valley Hall. And still we were – and even, I tell you, Coach Hassan last night, who I said – what did you think of that hit last week Owen Steele put on the Thompson kid? And this is a guy that has watched high-level high school football and coached high-level football. And he said something a lot like, that's a hit where you have to basically adjust your entire uniform from your helmet to your face mask to your shoulder pads to your belt to your knee pads. That's the type of hit Owen Steele put on. And that's... for me, I know the Rockridge offense is exciting with, you know, playmakers like Schweigen and Landon Wheatley and the guys that play there. But, man, defensively, that team just gets after it. And in the closing speed where you think there's a play that's going to develop, you know, in a matter of minutes, somebody from Rockridge is chasing down and closing the gap. And the only thing that aggravates me a little bit and I'm such a homer in this. I just that Newman game still makes me so mad because in the first half, Rockridge had so many opportunities to extend that lead and just didn't do it, and it cost him in the end. So, again, you know, Newman's a quality program, and that you have to give them credit, and they find ways to win. But I really feel good about where the Rockets are at heading into to Week 10 and the potential matchup. And I think they're going to have a tough first-round matchup, and we'll get into that because when you play an NUIC team, if that's who they play, Eastland Pearl City, and the Rockets have had some history with them in the postseason, you ain't playing no slouch.
Right. For me, Rockridge's postseason opponent, I think it's down to basically two, and I think Rockridge is going to be in the 8-9 game in the North. So they would either, I believe, most likely the scenario for me is they likely will host Eastland Pearl City, or they could potentially play at Seneca, who lost to Dupec last night. So I think those are the two most likely matchups for them. I think, like I said, though, the one that's more likely is Rockridge at home against Eastland Pearl City. The Rockets then would play likely into number one overall seed Farmington. We'll get more into that probably on our Pigskin show tonight, but that's a draw that I don't hate for Rockridge. I know Farmington's very good and they have a lot of numbers, but I guess this is getting off the beaten path a little bit. I just don't know how tough their schedule's been. Where I think Rockridge, if they play Farmington's schedule, they're very easily 9-0 as well. So we can get into all that later tonight on the Pigskin playoff preview. If we want to switch gears now to Mercer County.
Eagles win last night.
Golden Eagles win over Mendota 56-14. Mercer County trailed that game at the end of the first quarter 7-0 after turning the ball over three times in the first quarter. And then scored 56 points in a row. Mendota scored basically on the final play of the game to make it 56-14. But that game last night was interesting because the teams combined for 10 turnovers. There's 5 turnovers for both teams. So Mercer County turned over 5 times and still won 56-14. It was just a really fun game is how I describe it. Of course, there weren't playoff implications for either team in it. So for Mercer County especially, you could tell it was kind of all about just letting the kids have fun. They were doing a lot of, especially in the second half, they were doing a lot of different things where they were getting kids who don't play offense normally, like Jacob Kenny, who's had a great year as a defensive end, was playing running back in the second half and ended up scoring a touchdown. Mercer County's last offensive play of the season was a 44-yard touchdown run by Bodie Solomon, who's an offensive lineman and linebacker. That was awesome. He also blocked a punt and scored a touchdown, Solomon did, which was just – it was a great moment, and it was a great night in a season that, unfortunately, a lot of things went wrong outside of the kids' control. But last night, it felt like everything really went right, and the stars kind of aligned for those kids to have a lot of fun. You could tell – on the sideline, the kids were really enjoying themselves during the game. And it was just a night, and I kept saying this last night on our broadcast, those kids deserved a night like that with everything that's gone on this season and the last 2 weeks especially. And I'm glad they got it. It was a lot of fun watching kind of just the enjoyment level of kids playing a sport. That's what it's about at the end of the day, and that's what we got last night. And it added to it that Mercer County won, and I said this last week, and I'll say it again, you know, for last night. It's the same thing where the result, does it really matter? No. It was about the kids having fun, and they had fun last night. And they win 56-14, awesome end of the season for the Golden Eagles in a tough season, you know, on and off the field both. Awesome that they were able to get that done last night.
Yeah, and I saw somebody posted, and I loved it, and I can't remember who it was. Somebody shared it. Coach Kenny's message to Cale Braden, yeah, who didn't get to play at all this year. And those are like the moments to me that kind of mean the most, because, you know, a kid like that didn't get to play, and then to be recognized for still showing up at every game. You know, it's tough. You know, well, if you're a senior and you're not playing and you still show up to all the stuff.
And Coach Kenny, too, he did a great job in their post-game talk last night. That's why our post-game was so long. He brought up each individual senior that was graduating is graduating this year from Mercer County and talked about him for, you know, probably two or so minutes.
Great,
it was really cool. And like I said, it's been a difficult season. There's no doubt about it. And again, none of the kids' fault really for what's transpired. And I'm just super happy. Last night was just probably the most fun I've had all year, because you just could feel the positivity and the energy and everything. It was infectious, I thought, last night. And it was a fun second, third, and fourth quarter for sure, with the Golden Eagles kind of rolling at home and just everyone getting involved. Basically, every kid that was on the roster had some sort of role in that game last night in the finale of the season. It was a fun time covering the Golden Eagles this year. And I'll say this, too. One of the questions I asked Coach Kenny after the game was, I just said, just walk us through what you thought of the first trip around the track, you know. And basically, I think the consensus is, one, it was a lot of fun with the teams that Mercer County got to finally play again, talking about Rock Ridge and Sherrard and Orion and Monmouth Roseville most notably. But he said it, you know, it's a different world. The physicality, and he said, you know, the biggest difference is in this league, you have to bring it every week. And if you don't, you're going to get beat. And he's like, you have to bring it every play. And if you don't, you're going to get beat. And he's right, there are good programs and good teams in the Lincoln Trail too, but it's not to this caliber week in and week out that Mercer County played in the track this year. So I love the relationship with the league. It feels right. And some of those games this year just felt, and they were so fun and felt like big time games for Mercer County. I'm just excited for that relationship to continue to grow. We're going to get that in the winter, which will be fun. And then into the spring, too. And it's awesome that that's the conference home for Mercer County now.
Well, and just to kind of piggyback off that, and outside of football, so I was watching Tegan play, youngest daughter, played Sherrard in volleyball.
Oh, man, what a crowd.
Well, in the freshman game at 5 o'clock, I walk in there for that, and I'm like, there's this many people at a freshman game at 5 o'clock you didn't get the freshman crowd at the varsity matches and many of the Lincoln Trail Conference games. And I don't know if they can compare and contrast with the amount of concessions and how that's been different this year compared to other years.
Well, I forgot to mention this last week. So in the Rock Ridge-Mercer County game over at Rock Ridge, I believe, and I don't have the text in front of me, but I believe the Rock Ridge Booster Club that night made $6,800 in concessions, which is like triple the average normally. And I think they sold like $2,400 or so dollars in merchandise at their spirit shop. So, I mean, that's almost like $10,000 in one game.
It's a two-way street. The track wants Mirko in the league, too, because they know they have a good following and they're going to support the kids to whatever school they go. So there's no question. It was the right step. I know, are the results what we wanted it in the Mercer County School District, no. But we, you know, regroup, see what happens heading into the next year as it relates to football. But as you said, you know, you end on a positive
It'll
note.
Be an interesting offseason for sure. There's a lot of uncertainty. We talked about that last week. Today, though, that's not what it's about. It's about looking ahead to Week 10, I suppose. So quickly, we'll wrap up our first segment with some other scores around there, and then we'll get to Steve Susi here in a few short minutes. So Sherrard wraps up 2024 with a loss. The Tigers finished 2-7, 38-6. They fall to Riverdale on the road last night. And then Orion, man, they battled with Kewaunee. The Boilermakers were playing to get into the playoffs. They were 4-4 last night. Kewaunee ends up winning that game 44-34. But I'll say this about Orion. The trend of their season, I thought, man, they really got better. And their kids played hard to the end. And last night, they were playing without Owen Voorhees, who broke his finger at practice this week. So they hung around with that Kewaunee team, which I think is good. And we're down, I think, by 4 points at one point in the fourth quarter. So I think Coach Filler deserves a lot of credit for what he's done with the group he has. You know, keeping them engaged, keeping them playing hard and competing, especially down the stretch. And Cale Filler last night, he broke the passing yardage career record earlier in the season. Last night, he broke the passing touchdown career record at Orion. He has another full season to play, of course, next year. So congratulations to him on a, you know, an outstanding 3 years so far. And no doubt he'll have another great year next year.
Well, and I think even when you look at their season, man, how they battled that night against Rock Ridge, so impressive. I think probably one of the games early in the season that was key for them, you know, they just give up, and they gave up a lot of points this year, but way too many points, because I thought maybe the Mercer County Orion game was going to be kind of a 50-50 toss-up, but the Golden Eagles took that to them that night. And I think the other thing moving forward with Orion, you know, they got to figure out what's the answer for their numbers, or they got to get more kids out for football some way, somehow. And that's something that's going to have to be addressed in the offseason there, too.
That's something we can talk about in the offseason as well. So Orion 2-7 in 2024, Sherrard 2-7, and Mercer County 4-5. None of those teams qualifying for the playoffs. And quickly, Riverdale 4-5 as well. They took huge strides this season, and I know a disappointing loss for them last week against Hall, where they didn't have the kicker, Aiden Sensabaugh, in that game, and they lose by 3 points last week. And he's automatic on PATs, and I believe they went 1-for-4 on PAT attempts in that game, too, where they end up losing by 3-35.
Did he have a 32. Soccer commitment?
Yeah, soccer regional.
Man.
Yeah, they were in the regional.
I didn't realize that. Wow.
Yeah, because I was talking to Coach Dierks, because we did the pregame interview with him for Riverdale this week, and he said, he's like, they were trying to see if they could switch the date, and Allman tried, who was the host regional site for him, but they weren't able to do it with officials for the Friday regional
game.
Well,
and then he could have been a difference in the Kewaunee Riverdale game.
Yeah, that's what he said too, because he was hurt. Yeah, so yeah, and then like you said earlier, Monmouth Roseville, boy, a nice bounce back win for them over Newman last night, 21-0, and Princeton took care of business over Erie Provostown, 61-14.
You want any other area scores stand out last week?
Farmington won 29-0. Now, their quarterback, Lane Wheelwright, got hurt last week. I don't believe he played last night but was dressed, but from what I've heard, it sounds like he should be good to go in the playoffs. Farmington, for all intents and purposes, will be the number one overall seed in the North in the 2A bracket, which will come out tonight in the 8 o'clock hour. I don't think there's really any other big scores to tell. Well, Anawan Weathersfield, I think they're back fully healthy now. They beat Princeville, who was 7-1 last night, 28-27. So Anawan Weathersfield is 6-3 heading into the 1A playoffs. In terms of the track, this is likely where the teams will fall. Newman will be in 1A. Rock Ridge will be 2A, along with Erie Provostown will be 2A as well. Monmouth, Roseville, and Princeton in the 3A field. Kewaunee likely a 4A team. There, I think one interesting result to follow from last night in terms of postseason bracket type stuff. So Bloomington Central Catholic was 5-3. They lost to Prairie Central, who was 4-4. Looks like Bloomington Central Catholic, will be in the 2A field in the North. And that's a team that's 5-4 who's going to be in the 2A North, who is a very, very good 5-4, very battle-tested in terms of the schedule they play. So it'll be interesting to see where that draw lines up for a 5-4 team that I would not want to play if I was 8-1 or 9-0.
Yeah, no question. And then in the area, so Stark County, I saw were they trailing at halftime to United last night?
I have no idea.
It was a close game, but then they blew the roof off, as they say, in the second half. So United finishes the year winless at 0-9, but I can't remember who I was talking to. They brought back junior high football, I think, this year at United. They have 40-some-odd kids and have had a pretty good year, so hopefully they can turn the table then. Ridgewood last night in eight-man football, and I heard you talk about this last night. Their position may be to make a special run in eight-man football. They beat West Central, Coach Elder against Coach Kirby, 56-28. So Ridgewood finishing 8-1 on the season, but they've avenged their only loss to Amble.
I saw for them, though, and real quickly we'll get to Steve Soucy here momentarily, from Kyle Kantmeyer's projection with NUIC football, I believe in the eight-man bracket, potentially Ridgewood could run into Milledgeville in the second round, which are two state title contenders, I think, which would be a really kind of interesting matchup in the second round of the eight-man playoffs. Again, that'll be part of our Pigskin Playoff preview show tonight on WRMJ. Anything else you want to note, really, before we get to Steve Soucy? All your postseason bracket questions are about to be answered, everybody.
Yeah, just a couple of reminders. So I know, like, fall sports next week, volleyball regionals getting underway, and cross-country regional. The local kids running up at Saki Golf Course in Rock Island. Regional play in volleyball beginning next week. Winter sports starting Monday with girls high school basketball. And then a week from Monday, wrestling. And
this Monday?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Doesn't girls basketball?
No, that's next Monday. No way. Because the volleyball postseason starts this week. It's the following Monday.
It is the following Monday? Okay, so there is a week break. But we're getting closer to winter sports. And like Ty says, Steve Soucy, great guest, Friday Night Drive. Again, follows this thing, man, from start to finish, where he really breaks down the projection. He gets into a lot of the 2A North bracket, too, so some good stuff coming up. As what do we say about the Colonel as we're broadcasting live from the Dale Jones Auctioneer Studios? Oh, the one other thing you told me, it's nice to learn about, you know, new administrators in town, the new superintendent at Mercer County, a longtime Yankee fan, right? So how mad he got to be this morning.
I know. We can probably talk about this later. I think people want to hear about Steve Soucy.
Yeah. So we got that coming up.
Right. So we'll come back and hear from Steve Soucy after this on WRMJ.
If you have farmland or machinery to sell, call Dale Jones of Merritt Auctions. The Merritt Auctions team have over 100 years of combined experience in auctions and real estate to help you gain full exposure to the market and achieve maximum return on your assets. Merritt Auctions specializes in live auctions, timed online-only auctions, and virtual online auctions. For a no-obligation consultation to sell your land or machinery, call Dale Jones today.
$15.29, but I'm here.
Hi, I'm Dale Jones with Merritt Auctions. Give me a call at 309-299-6400.
You finally have your dream home. Now you need the right insurance to protect it, because when it comes time to file a claim, you don't want any surprises. Talk to a Country Financial representative to find out if you have the right protection. They can help you understand your options and select coverages to meet your needs.
In Aledo, see me, Tracy Bigham.
Or Jason Potter.
In Edgington, see me, Brent Bigham.
Home insurance policies issued by Country Mutual Insurance Company, Country Casualty Insurance Company, or Country Preferred Insurance Company, Bloomington, Illinois.
Discover the Diamond Ag difference and take your harvest to the next level. Diamond Ag offers the top seed brands in the industry, including Midwest, Stein, Brevant, LG, and Zotavo. Their nutritionals and crop protection will keep your fields healthy and resilient all year long, and no one in the ag retail industry offers a broader selection of fertilizer products and services. Contact seed manager Brian Brooks at 309-582-4681. Diamond Ag, with locations in Aledo, Alexis, and Knoxville, deeply rooted in quality people and quality service.
Who doesn't love new kicks? When you need new footwear, come to 6140 Run in Galesburg. They have just the right fit. Check out their quality brands for fitness, Hoka, Saucony, Mizuno, and Brooks, for just hanging out, Hey Dude and Birkenstock, and even for work, Red Wing and Wolverine. Not sure? Grab a 6140 Run gift card. 6140 Run has the perfect fit for everyone. 6140 Run for the holidays, 185 Main Street in Galesburg.
Jim Taylor back on WRMJ, WRMJ.com, along with Ty Taylor. Great to visit with Steve Soucy with Friday Night Drive. Of course, the bracket expert when we talk about high school football. Before we get into kind of the pairings and the projection and the conjecture, I always like to begin our conversation by saying support local journalism. Last night, it was funny, I ran into Mark Nessler, a longtime former Argus Dispatch writer. He was out watching the Rockridge game with Hall Township last night. Good to see him. man, I miss a lot of guys that used to cover the prep beat every day, so it's good to have Steve Soucy on. So when I say support local journalism, you should subscribe to Friday Night Drive, because if you love high school football and local prep coverage, this is the guy you need to follow and support. How do they do that, Steve Soucy?
You know, basically, you can just go to the website and it'll get you there if that's what you're interested in. At FridayNightDrive.com, it's pretty comprehensive coverage of Illinois high school football, and this is where I think the site, if this process and the football playoffs are something that you're really passionate about and really enjoy, I think you'd be really hard pressed to find more comprehensive coverage of that process, the playoffs themselves, and as many football teams as we try to cover and take care of at Friday Night Drive.
Amen.
Yeah, I'm a Friday Night Drive subscriber, and I echo everything that Steve just said. They do a great job, and I've been kind of following your coverage the past, 12 hours or so with kind of like the running blog you have and the playoff projection. So I guess we can get into that, Steve. I think the biggest thing for me right now, when you look at like the 2A postseason, which that's what a lot of our conversation will focus around with us covering Rock Ridge, is now Wilmington, the defending 2A state champion. They're always kind of on that 2A, 3A line. To me this season, I think in your projection, I saw you have them in 3A right now. Is there anything that could happen today that pushes them back into 2A, or do you see them being in the 3A field this year?
You know, the fact that last night they moved yet one more spot down the list, and when I say down, I mean further into Class 3A. I think there are a couple of things today that, would be classified as pretty substantial upsets that might change the field. But I don't think it's going to change the field in a way that would move Wilmington back to the Class 2A field. So, it's always, like you said, it's always tricky with them. They're always right there on that fence between 2 and 3A. But, the things that happened last night that largely affected the field, there were a lot of teams that kind of punched their way into the field, but they tended to be some of the smaller schools. One that really kind of hurt Wilmington's quest to stay in there was Clifton Central's win over Salt Fork. That kind of earned Central a spot into the field and pushed a lot of schools down one space. And that was one of the things that led to Wilmington kind of almost, I wouldn't say completely locked into 3A at this point, but it's almost as close as you can be to saying, hey, they're not going to move. That was one of the stories that you were watching. You saw some of those little bubble watches as well in some of the larger classifications. And over the course of the night, there were a lot of those teams that were like, well, maybe we'll hang on in the smaller classification. And almost no one ended up doing that. So it was definitely a much different year than it was last year when it kind of went the other way in regards to that.
And then also in the 2A field, I think one of the questions, at least throughout this year, has been with Maroa Forsyth, if they'll be in the north half of the state or in the south half of the state. It always seems like they're one of the more northernmost like teams that go south. I know they were in the north a couple of years ago. They were and ended up running into Rock Ridge in the quarterfinals that year. So for them, how do you kind of project where they'll go? Will they be north or south, you think?
You know, that's probably the trickiest map of all the eight classes in terms of deciding who is north and south. There is a razor thin line right now between three schools. Between two will have to go north and one will have to go south. And if you call it by the letter of the law and even get so ticky-tacky that you start looking at actual longitude and latitude lines in terms of where they belong, it that would indicate that Maroa Forsyth would go south. However, that line is so close that, you could see a universe where they may move north anyway.
Well, and so you're saying there is some potential wiggle room then for the IHSA when they look at that 2A bracket.
You know, it's one of those things that, people say, well, isn't that a bylaw? Well, no, it actually isn't. They try really hard to, I think, abide by clear north-south distinctions, but I'll just give you an example of what might occur. If they look at the map and they see, four teams that are hovering around that north-south line, and you need to move one north or south, but three of them are on the eastern portion of the state and one of them is on the western portion of the state. And there are the line is negligible. There's a very small difference. You know, it might be more sensible to keep the three in the one region that are kind of closer together in the same section rather than, you know, then splitting them and then leaving and then dragging that one from the west all the way over. But it would have to be kind of a situation where it was so close that you would be like, well, you know, that probably makes more sense from a logistical sense. It has happened before. It doesn't happen very often. But by the strict, like I said, the strict letter of the law, Moroa should be south based on the 16 teams that are currently, you know, the 16 most south. But the line is so close that you could see an interpretation that might have it go different.
Well, and that's a big storyline then heading into tonight in terms of where they end up at. Now, one of the other issues that we always talk about is what's the potential for 4 and 5 teams with the 256 qualifiers that'll be announced later today. What are you projecting there in terms of 4 and 5 teams getting in?
Well, right now I have one, and that was right now that's also kind of an interesting story. The one team that I have projected doing it isn't actually at 4 and 5 yet. They have to play today. That is Chicago Kenwood out of the Public League. They're playing Phillips today, so they have to win that game to get to 4 and 5 to be in that conversation. I mean, they're favored in that game, but you know, if that doesn't happen, then you go to the next team on the list, which happens to be Plainfield North. That would actually not change the bracket that much. However, there are three other 4 and 4 teams playing today. So those teams are all playing teams that they should win the game. But if they don't, then that would open up another spot for another 4 and 5 team, because those teams would also finish 4 and 5. The teams in question would not be that 4 and 5 team because they all have precarious point situations. It would be a different 4 and 5 team. So you have to keep an eye on those 3 4 and 4 games just to make sure that they don't get upset. Because if that happens, then it would open up the field for another 4 and 5 team. And then, of course, then the chaos begins a little bit because, you know, which 4 and 4 team may have lost, what class are they in, what team would replace them. Then you might see some teams move around. So those three teams in question, in case anybody wants to keep an eye on them, Aurora Marmion, Chicago Westinghouse, and Chicago Noble Bulls Prep. So those are the three teams that need to win today to get to the 5-win group. If they don't do it, then obviously we'll need another 4 and 5. So the issue in week 9 was we were looking at the teams that were 4 and 4 very heavily last night. And there were 6 teams that were 4 and 4 that were playing teams that had a better record. So they either had to pull off a substantial upset to get into the field or a mild upset to do it. And 6 teams were able to do that. So they were the kind of the teams that I said that were fighting their way in. Conversely, there were 3 teams that were 4 and 4 heading into last night that lost to teams that had a lesser record than 4 and 4. So that's what you're kind of watching. You're kind of watching that balance. How does that come out? We started week 9. I believe that there would be 4 teams that we would need. But since there was a difference between those two groups of 3 teams, 4 went down to 1. So last year that went in reverse. We had 3 teams fight their way in and 7 teams failed to win games that it looked like that they would. So that trend reversed this year. So that meant less 4 and 5 teams. If you remember, we had 6 of them last year that we needed to fill out the field. One of them actually won a state championship in Nazareth. So that kind of vouched for the process of, you know, sometimes there's 4 and 5 teams that are worth it. So it looks like we're only going to have 1. But like I said, there's at least a possibility that number could grow to 4, even if that's unlikely.
Okay, so when you look at the smaller school classifications, like I'm talking 1A through 3A, as of, you know, Saturday morning before games start going on today, how stable do you think the projection is? I mean, is there much wiggle room, you think, for the field you've projected so far, or is there still a lot that maybe could shake out today?
There's a couple of moves that potentially could happen, and they're based on the results of a couple of Saturday games. One of them that's probably pretty notable is Belleville Althoff is playing Caneland in a Saturday afternoon game today. Right now I have Althoff winning that game. Caneland's a pretty solid 6A program, so that's a pretty big gap, 1A to a 6A. So, I mean, if Althoff loses that game, they would lose their position as the number one seed. Another game that also has, you know, pretty substantial situation is Chester. They're playing Waterloo today. Waterloo is a one-loss team in a much larger classification. If Chester, right now I have Waterloo projected to win the game, but if Chester were to win that game, they would rocket back up the seed chart past all of the one-loss teams and stay as the 9-0 team and move up to the one line there. So, you know, those are the, I think, the biggest ones that could kind of jumble up those brackets. It's largely in the South bracket. One of the things that time and the fact that I do need a couple of hours of sleep don't allow me to do is that I don't do a real good job of checking for teams that are tied with playoff points. So that's a process that I'll go through a little bit this morning. So there may be some tweaks between two teams that maybe finish 6-3 and have 40 playoff points. Last night, I just kind of did it on the draw that, you know, the quickest draw that I could come up with. Just to get an eyeball picture. But there are tiebreakers in place. And sometimes, to be completely honest, those ties are solved by random number generator because the tiebreakers are all tied. So some of those answers, as good as I like to think that I am at projecting this, I can't project what the IHSA is. So, you know, some of those little – so the seeds where two teams, same wins, same point totals, It might come down to the IHSA random generator, and there's nothing I can do as a projectionist to figure out how that's going to spit it out.
Okay, we need to take a quick break in our conversation with Steve Soucy. We'll hear from him more. More IHSA football bracket talk coming up with Friday Night Drive Steve Soucy after this on Sportsline on WRMJ.
If you have farmland or machinery to sell, call Dale Jones of Merritt Auctions. The Merritt Auctions team have over 100 years of combined experience in auctions and real estate to help you gain full exposure to the market and achieve maximum return on your assets. Merritt Auctions specializes in live auctions, timed online-only auctions, and virtual online auctions. For a no-obligation consultation to sell your land or machinery, call Dale Jones today.
$15.29, but I'm here.
Hi, I'm Dale Jones with Merritt Auctions. Give me a call at 309-299-6400.
Are you ready for your teen to get their license? At Country Financial, they know it's scary when you see your kids back out of the driveway for the first time. If you know your young driver has the proper protection from Country Financial, it's a little easier. Contact your local Country Financial representative to chat about car insurance today.
In Aledo, see me, Tracy Bigham.
Or Jason Potter.
In Edgington, see me, Brent Bigham.
Policies issued by Country Mutual, Country Preferred, and Country Casualty Insurance Company, Bloomington, Illinois.
Discover the Diamond Ag difference and take your harvest to the next level. Diamond Ag offers the top seed brands in the industry, including Midwest, Stein, Brevant, LG, and Zotavo. Their nutritionals and crop protection will keep your fields healthy and resilient all year long, and no one in the ag retail industry offers a broader selection of fertilizer products and services. Contact seed manager Brian Brooks at 309-582-4681. Diamond Ag, with locations in Aledo, Alexis, and Knoxville, deeply rooted in quality people and quality service.
Who doesn't love new kicks? When you need new footwear, come to 6140 Run in Galesburg. They have just the right fit. Check out their quality brands for fitness, Hoka, Saucony, Mizuno, and Brooks, for just hanging out, Hey Dude and Birkenstock, and even for work, Red Wing and Wolverine. Not sure? Grab a 6140 Run gift card. 6140 Run has the perfect fit for everyone. 6140 Run for the holidays, 185 Main Street in Galesburg.
And welcome back to Sportsline on WRMJ, continuing our conversation with Friday Night Drive Steve Soucy, looking at IHSA football playoff projections with the brackets coming out tonight. And I know it looks like a potential really interesting 3A matchup early on between a pair of perennial powers.
I was going to say the one thing I look at with your projection in 3A, you have the state title game, it looks like, in week two, potentially, between Byron and Lombard Montini can play into one another. Man, what a projection there. What do you think about that 3A bracket and what you have set up there? Because that's surely going to be an interesting second round game if it plays out that way.
Yeah, it was one of those things that I was looking at it, you know, prior to coming into week nine, and I wasn't sure how Montini was going to do in that game against St. Lawrence last night. They ended up winning it. So that was going to move Montini in some way, whether they were going to be very high in the group of 6-win teams or very high in the group of 7-win teams. And this was a situation that I saw as a possibility, was because there aren't a lot of 7-win teams in 3A North. Montini has a large cachet of playoff points. So it looked like Montini, if they won that game, was going to end up around the 8-9 line. And that was kind of why it got a little bit interesting in regards to what happened in week 8 between Byron and Dixon, because you saw that Byron won that game on a late two-point conversion. So Byron was able to protect their ability to stay on that one line. But kind of looking ahead, you started to think to yourself, maybe it wouldn't have been the worst thing in the world, at least for bracketing purposes, for Byron to maybe not win that game, because we were on a collision course to Byron and Montini meeting very early in the playoffs if they both ended up winning, you know, essentially winning out, and that's what happened.
Well, I'm curious, I guess, you know, because of that, when you see Byron and Montini potentially meeting up in the second round, like, you know, my dad just said, it feels like that could potentially be like a state championship game. So with games like that, I know there's really no perfect solution, but do you ever see, just like from what you hear from people like around the state, if they'd ever go back to a 1-32 field in each class? I know it got passed a few years ago, then was rescinded basically. So, I mean, have you heard much about that at all, like this year?
You know, I haven't, and it's one of those things that we, you know, when we talk about, you know, maybe changing the playoff format and doing all these other things, it's one of those things that I know a lot of people are like, when we change the proposal, can we please write that in there? Because it seems like the people that are most affected by this, there are very few people that seem to be against the 1-32 format for everybody. Especially, I mean, I know that's not specifically what we're talking about here, especially when we start talking about like 4, 5, and 6, where the geography is in a way that I don't really know how helpful North versus South really is. We're still getting a lot of long road trips in the North-South situation because there's a heavier concentration of schools in those classifications that are in North and South. I know the arguments, especially for 1 and 2 and 3, is that the geography kind of works better for that. And it does save on, you know, limiting those, you know, 300-400 mile trips in the first round, but you're still going to get them even in the 1-16. I mean, I know there's one sitting in there that I have right now. I have Illini West projected to play Chicago Christian in the opening round of a North-South bracket. And while that's the way the North-South bracket works, that's not exactly a short trip. That's not really saving anything in terms of mileage travel and all those other things. So, you know, for me, I've always kind of been an advocate of the 1-32 because it creates a lot of unique situations, and it's not like we're doing it 3, 4, 5 times. I mean, one program is likely going to have to make one trip like that. Maybe they might not have to make it at all. Even if you make a deep run, how many of those are you really going to have? Maybe 2. I mean, you're going to get home games. Other teams are going to have to travel to you. I think we're getting our hands all wrung about a potentially one trip, and I think those also create fascinating memories for student athletes. I mean, I know when we did do it 1-32, I run into people all the time that talk about, hey, you remember that time we had that first round playoff game where we had to go 3.5 hours to a town we'd never heard of and got an experience and playing in a place that that we never would have otherwise. And those are making lasting memories for people. And it's just, you know, I get really agitated when I generate playoff brackets that feature 3 games that happened during the regular season conference rematches between teams that already played, sometimes as recently as the week before. That does happen. We have a week 9 game that's repeated in the first round of the playoffs. And I know that those things might still pop up at 1-32, but I'm certain they would not pop up nearly as often as they do now.
So the only thing that I'll say, I'll be the kind of the, I still like, and this is Jim Taylor speaking. I'm still going to say, I kind of like the 1-16. And the only reason I'm saying that is you just mentioned what I like about 2A, that there's still this wiggle room today of trying to figure out where one school is going to wind up at. Because right when you go through, if you go 1-32 with the 256 qualifiers, we lose some of the drama, speculation, and conjecture going into this Saturday night. And then the other thing I'll always say is, okay, where does it end? Because then if we go 1-32, the next thing is, well, wait a minute. What about strength of schedule? How do we determine that? Because there's going to be those cases where you have a 9-0 team from somewhere that hasn't played a very good schedule, and they're going to play a 5-4 team that's a 31 seed or a 32 seed or whatever and get absolutely drilled. And people are going to say, well, that shouldn't happen. That they just ruined a great regular season of a team because they ran into what? A parochial school. Because you throw in that argument into it. So I don't know. We could go on and on and on. I know we're going to talk about 1-32. But the other thing, I wanted to get your reaction about my big thing is I think the higher seed should always get a host, in my opinion, because you've earned that during the regular season. Where do you stand kind of on the higher seed thing? That was one of the things that came out of the football advisory committee. Do you think they should change that, determining how the host school works in the postseason?
You know, I think I see merits to both sides of this discussion. One of the things that always seems to come up that I kind of like, I think it would be neat if you gave the higher seed the option in the first round of how they wanted to play it. I think that would offer a very kind of intriguing look into how teams approach things because, you know, if you're the higher seed and said, hey, I want my later round games to be at home. I don't want the bracket to determine, you know, if say, for example, a 12 seed starts a little upset bid and rambles through the playoffs and wins a couple games early on. But the way that we do it now would have a quarterfinal game of a top seed having to go to a 12, in the third round. I think that would be interesting if they went to something like that. I have a little bit of a problem with the way that the seeding is done now. I'm of the opinion that there's a way that we could do it that I think would be a little bit better. And then if they did it that way, then I would advocate for, yes, the home team, the higher seed should always get the home bid, because right now there are certain elements of the seeding process that I think are a little bit broken. We could have a long discussion about what I think those are, but I don't know if we have the time for that. But in a nutshell, I see the arguments for both sides of this debate. In some ways, I think a lot of this might be resolved if you said, okay, the first two rounds we'll do it the way we're doing it now, and once we get to the quarterfinals, then the higher seed gets to the home games the rest of the way. I think that would be a nice balance of those two discussions, and at least give everybody a crack at possibly getting a home game. I know there would be some situations where that would not be. As a lower seed, that maybe it would not work out for you. But, you know, I see the value of winning a playoff game and having at least if you do win a playoff game, at least having an opportunity to host one, regardless of what your seed is.
The other thing I wanted to ask you, in my opinion, it's not if, but when playoff expansion is going to occur. Do you feel that's coming or not? I mean, just because so many times we see these amendment proposals where, you know, it's calling for expansion of the playoffs. Do you think that is just going to happen eventually?
I do. And I think I'm not necessarily like the one that is this currently, you know, bandied about, the one that has expansion to 48 teams per classification. I have a hard time commenting on these things because sometimes I'm a little bit in an echo chamber, especially on this weekend when there are so many people that are really passionate about this system and really love it and love all the nuance to it and all the things that we're discussing today. I have a hard time accepting the fact that there's a lot of people out there that don't want this and want something else instead, just based on the response that I get and how passionate people are about this and how they, you know, last night at, you know, 2:30 in the morning, there were 100 plus people in the live video that I was shooting. And that was almost 3 o'clock in the morning. So that was one of the things that was crazy about that whole situation. But I know there are schools that are not happy with the current system and feel like it's not the best way to do this. I just don't know if we've reached critical mass yet in terms of people that are like, let's try an alternative, let's do this. I think there's enough advocacy for the current system. And I might be reading this wrong, but that's one of the reasons why the district proposals haven't passed, is that I think we're close to that critical mass. We're just not quite there yet. So, but I do think whether it be with this current proposal or something in the very near future, I do think we're going to see an expansion of teams, you know, maybe some sort of system similar to what we're talking about right now. But I know there's a lot of trepidation with doing that, because like you discussed on a previous topic, what's the line? Like, how far do we have to go to at least attempt to make people happier with the system than they are now? What would be an effective resource in what seems to be the largest complaint in this situation, the conference jumping and the scheduling issues? You know, those are the things that, like, what would fix those things, and what would just be placating, you know, the what appears to be the minority. I don't know how big of a minority it is of dealing with those types of situations, because that seems to be what we get really upset about on a year-to-year basis, is that there's a group of teams that I will admit are having trouble filling those schedules and doing the things that they need to do. But, you know, at what point is, you know, letting 2-7s into the playoffs going to fix that? Is it worth doing that to allow that to happen? And then at what point do you simply say all this machination is not worth it, and you just let everybody in and do the modifications that are required to that? I wouldn't like that at all, but I also don't know if I'm on board with, 2-7 playoff qualifiers either.
All right, so we're running out of time with Steve. I just want to circle back to the 2A North bracket with Rock Ridge. So in Steve's projection as of this morning, he has Rock Ridge hosting Eastland Pearl City in the 8-9 matchup in the North. How safe is that game, you think? Is there much that could happen that could potentially knock either of those teams off of the 8-9 game? So I guess, how confident are you in that matchup coming to fruition tonight?
You know, I feel pretty good about that, to be completely honest with you, because if we do have some teams moving around, I think the one thing that we have to watch there in regards to that is a interesting map interpretation, because if we do have a situation where it's decided that, you know, Moroa is going north rather than staying south, then Moroa's seed, it would be, well, who are they replacing? I think the argument there would be, if they're doing that, then it would move Moroa into a situation where they would be a higher seed in the 2A bracket than the team that they are replacing. So then that would jumble the 8-9 game. So I think that's really the only scenario that would have me believing that that's probably not going to be what we're going to see. So that's really, once again, one of those things that we're going to have to wait and see if there's a little bit of a map revision there. I don't think that's going to happen, but if it does, as far as the field construction goes, the 32 teams that belong in 2A, it would take something pretty fascinating to happen in order for that 32-team construction to change. So in that spirit, I think that is a fairly safe projection for an 8-9 game.
All right. It's been great talking to Steve Soucy, and I didn't realize, and I'm glad he hit on it earlier today. You know, two, I think, really intriguing games taking place, at least, could impact the lower half of 2A with Chester playing Waterloo, the Yellow Jackets of Chester against the Waterloo Bulldogs, a big game, and then Belleville-Altoff, which could impact the number one seed in 1A. In the southern half, taking on the Caneland Knights, who P.J. Fleck will be rooting for today, his alma mater at Caneland in Maple Park. So that's an interesting game to follow as well. Again, Friday Night Drive is the place to be all high school football season. Again, Steve Soucy, we say support local journalism, and we tell everybody listening, if you're not a member of Friday Night Drive, you need to get a subscription. So we'll close it out this way. How do they do that again?
Yeah, the easiest way to do it would just be simply to go to FridayNightDrive.com, and there'll be a tab up at the top where it'll give you an option to subscribe. And like I said, you might think you've missed a little bit of the party here because you weren't involved with the process of getting into the playoff brackets. But if you go today, that'll be, you know, an opportunity to catch the back end of it. But we'll have expansive coverage of the playoffs, and it's not restricted to the larger classes. We get down into 1A, 2A, 3A, and even have a little bit of eight-man coverage on there as well. So, you know, it's definitely something that if you're passionate about high school football, I think you're going to find a lot there you're going to enjoy.
All right. So do you go for the energy drink, or do you like just drink like a 49-cent cup of black coffee, or what keeps you going this time of year?
Well, I've never had a cup of coffee in my life, believe it or not.
Me neither.
So, yep. Never had one sip of it. So, I'm just kind of a, you know, whatever's in front of me. Last night I was fueled on zero sugar A&W root beer. So that was what got me through the rest of the evening. And then over the course of course, I'll try to switch back up and drink more water. That's what I'm supposed to do anyway. So, but no, that's what gets me through it. But you know, this time of year is about the only time that I consider myself relating to the athlete. I run on adrenaline most of the time. So a lot of people joke for me that this is my Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. And it kind of is, to be completely honest with you, because I really enjoy the process, and it's a really fun time of year for me.
Well, I know our listening audience appreciates hearing from you, and thank you for joining us again. Always love following your work, and keep it up. I know people across the state really supported and appreciate it too, and enjoy the rest of your Saturday.
Well, thanks so much, and you guys enjoy the playoffs over there.
Yep, thanks a lot, Steve.
You're listening to WRMJ, WRMJ.com.
If you have farmland or machinery to sell, call Dale Jones of Merritt Auctions. The Merritt Auctions team have over 100 years of combined experience in auctions and real estate to help you gain full exposure to the market and achieve maximum return on your assets. Merritt Auctions specializes in live auctions, timed online-only auctions, and virtual online auctions. For a no-obligation consultation to sell your land or machinery, call Dale Jones today.
$15.29 by the buy, I'm here.
Hi, I'm Dale Jones with Merritt Auctions. Give me a call at 309-299-6400.
Discover the Diamond Ag difference and take your harvest to the next level. Diamond Ag offers the top seed brands in the industry, including Midwest, Stein, Brevant, LG, and Zotavo. Their nutritionals and crop protection will keep your fields healthy and resilient all year long, and no one in the ag retail industry offers a broader selection of fertilizer products and services. Contact seed manager Brian Brooks at 309-582-4681. Diamond Ag, with locations in Alito, Alexis, and Knoxville, deeply rooted in quality people and quality service.
Building relationships, supporting the community, and service. These are the things Country Financial stands for. We're neighbors who lend a helping hand and support the fabric of our community, including charitable organizations, sports, financial education, and civic organizations. Since we're already neighbors, let's get together and chat to talk about the things that are important to you and how we can help you protect them. See your local Country Financial representative today.
In Alito, see me, Tracy Bigham.
Or Jason Potter.
In Edgington, see me, Brent Bigham.
Who doesn't love new kicks? When you need new footwear, come to 6140 Run in Galesburg. They have just the right fit. Check out their quality brands for fitness, Hoka, Saucony, Mizuno, and Brooks. for just hanging out, Hey Dude and Birkenstock, and even for work, Red Wing and Wolverine. Not sure? Grab a 6140 Run gift card. 6140 Run has the perfect fit for everyone. 6140 Run for the holidays, 185 Main Street in Galesburg.
This is Jim Taylor at WRMJ Radio in Aledo. He's Brian Roush at WCCI Radio in Savannah. And this is Jim and Brian talking high school sports on the radio. 50 years for the IHSA High School Football Playoffs. We select the 256 playoff qualifiers on Saturday night. Brian Roush, is this still as big a deal it was 50 years ago? I know it's changed a lot, hasn't it?
It sure has, and I think it's maybe a bigger deal. Now you have TV coverage of the release of the pairings. You have your station, my station, and tons of stations doing a playoff pairing show. And I think it's just a celebration. It's a celebration of football. Most coaches that their team is going to be selected get together with their teams. They have a party. They celebrate things. And then the second season begins, and you start to, you know, weed out the field, and eventually you'll crown eight champions.
And I know when we look back at how it began, you know, just five classes, 16 qualifiers per class. So, you know, talking about 80 qualifiers back in 1974. Man, a whole lot different now where, you know, 5-4 will get you in, maybe even 4-5 in some cases. And I think back in the day, if you finished 8-1, you were nervous if you were even going to make the playoffs. Man, that's changed, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we all know of those stories of teams that were 8-1, 7-2 that didn't get in. And I also think about the old format. You'd finish up your season on a Friday, you'd play a first-round game on a Wednesday, and then I think you played again on Saturday. And I just can't even imagine, you know, the toll that took on players and their health and safety, and even like the coaches, you know, having to prepare for three opponents in a 10-day span.
Yeah, crazy when you really think about that even happened back in the day. And, you mentioned just kind of the speculation and the conjecture, and that's why it is a bigger deal, I think, because trying to figure out what these matchups are, and I know many parties really start taking deep dives about, you know, week four or week five of the season, and then you get kind of continuing coverage from a lot of different people leading up to tonight when the 256 playoff pairings or 256 playoff qualifiers are announced. And then, you know, after the pairings are announced, don't you think there's a little bit of a letdown?
Yeah, I think there is, and I think suddenly you have a lot of people who say, oh, you know, let's fill out our brackets like the NCAA tournament. But one thing we know for sure, likely the IHSA is going to throw a few curveballs. It always seems to be that, you know, the experts have it pinned down, but maybe there's just a change here or there that they didn't foresee. And the other part of that, too, is, you know, in our listening area, probably your listening area, it becomes in some cases like a conference tournament, and we're always hoping that's not the case. And I don't really know, you know, how you fix that if you go 1 through 32. Again, you know, that was something I think we almost saw but didn't. So,
well, and I you know, I'm still not sold, and I know a lot of coaches are going to say, who's that saying that? I'm still not sold on 1 through 32, and the only reason I say that is because then you really take away the speculation and conjecture, because once the 256 playoff qualifiers are announced, it's pretty easy to determine who is playing who. And, you know, with kind of the subjectivity of where the north-south split is, can kind of throw a curveball in some of those things. And then you think you have the bracket right, but then the IHSA says, no, this is where this north-south split is going to be, and this team's going north, this team's going south. So, your bracket's not right like you thought it was. I kind of like that still a little bit.
Yeah, I think it brings a little extra intrigue into Saturday night. And again, it's so neat just to talk about the different traditions and the playoff histories and to think about those maybe Friday nights or most likely Saturday afternoons to come where, you know, you may face off against a team that you'll never see again or, you know, you haven't played in 40 years. But that's the beauty. It brings the whole state together. And some of those road trips for teams are memorable. Some of those home games are memorable. It's just really kind of awesome.
All right, so I see one of the potential matchups could be in 2A, 7-2 Rock Ridge taking on 7-2 EPC. That's Eastland Pearl City, which is in your coverage territory. Rock Ridge is in the WRMJ coverage territory. Give me a scout on Eastland Pearl City.
A very physical team. They run the football and they run it pretty well. They've got a linebacker that is arguably one of the best players in the area, a junior. But yeah, they've brought back the physicality of Wildcat football, and I think that they're going to be a solid, you know, playoff team in 2A that, you know, could go a couple of rounds, but if they match up against Rock Ridge, that's one of those where it's kind of a knockout game right away.
Yeah, and a quick scout on Rock Ridge, very stout defensively. They've been pretty tough against the run all season long, and they have a dynamic sophomore quarterback who's a top high school baseball prospect being recruited collegiately at the D1 level. By the name of Colin Schweigen. So that would be an interesting game, and some of the things I see is maybe an 8-9 seed, so it would mean the winner of that game would play the number one seed in the north half of the bracket, but we'll let the experts decide that tonight when the pairings are officially announced through WCCI Radio and WRMJ Radio. He's Brian Roush at WCCI Radio in Savannah. I'm Jim Taylor at WRMJ Radio in Aledo. And this is Jim and Brian talking high school sports on the radio.
If you have farmland or machinery to sell, call Dale Jones of Merritt Auctions. The Merritt Auctions team have over 100 years of combined experience in auctions and real estate to help you gain full exposure to the market and achieve maximum return on your assets. Merritt Auctions specializes in live auctions, timed online-only auctions, and virtual online auctions. For a no-obligation consultation to sell your land or machinery, call Dale Jones today.
$15.29, but I'm here.
Hi, I'm Dale Jones with Merritt Auctions. Give me a call at 309-299-6400.
You finally have your dream home. Now you need the right insurance to protect it, because when it comes time to file a claim, you don't want any surprises. Talk to a Country Financial representative to find out if you have the right protection. They can help you understand your options and select coverages to meet your needs.
In Aledo, see me, Tracy Bigham.
Or Jason Potter.
In Edgington, see me, Brent Bigham.
Home insurance policies issued by Country Mutual Insurance Company, Country Casualty Insurance Company, or Country Preferred Insurance Company, Bloomington, Illinois.
Discover the Diamond Ag difference and take your harvest to the next level. Diamond Ag offers the top seed brands in the industry, including Midwest, Stein, Brevant, LG, and Zotavo. Their nutritionals and crop protection will keep your fields healthy and resilient all year long, and no one in the ag retail industry offers a broader selection of fertilizer products and services. Contact seed manager Brian Brooks at 309-582-4681. Diamond Ag, with locations in Aledo, Alexis, and Knoxville, deeply rooted in quality people and quality service.
Who doesn't love new kicks? When you need new footwear, come to 6140 Run in Galesburg. They have just the right fit. Check out their quality brands for fitness, Hoka, Saucony, Mizuno, and Brooks, for just hanging out, Hey Dude and Birkenstock, and even for work, Red Wing and Wolverine. Not sure? Grab a 6140 Run gift card. 6140 Run has the perfect fit for everyone. 6140 Run for the holidays, 185 Main Street in Galesburg.
Back with more Sportsline from the Dale Jones Auctioneer Studios. Well, we've finished 9 weeks of high school football. We get set to segue to the postseason officially tonight in the 7 o'clock hour. Pigskin playoff preview on WRMJ, WRMJ.com, and also available on the WRMJ app. And in the 8 o'clock hour, that's when the IHSA officially starts to release the pairing, starting with 1A, followed by 2A, 3A, 4A, to finish through 8A. But I know a tip of the cap to the people that have helped us out with the Friday nights here in 2024. Some new faces, new voices, too, I know.
Cole and Ryan. Cole, our scoreboard show host. Ryan covered Orion for us this season. Eric Hutchins, a familiar face and voice on the WRMJ airwaves, helping us out with Sherrard this year. So A-plus work from all of them. Great job, everybody. And like I texted them this morning, really appreciate them helping us out and helping, you know, us cover, what, 4 schools for 9 weeks? Really hard to do, and isn't possible without them. So way to go, guys. Thanks a lot.
And then also, of course, Rusty Dunn, not necessarily new to the WRMJ airwaves, a return. He was last on, like, in, what, 83 or something, yeah. But good to have him on.
And he was awesome on the sidelines. Yeah, no, and Monty question. Smith.
And you could tell he enjoys it, and then Monty Smith on the airwaves.
Monty Smith will be with us tonight and next week with our Rockridge playoff coverage.
And I just want to back up. I gave Monty Smith his first break this year, not you, because I talked to him about the Ragbri.
Yeah.
Right in Central Park.
But, prelude.
Yeah. But, and again, Monty is going to team up with you beginning next week with Rockridge Rocket Football, and I'll handle the sidelines.
And you down on the sidelines.
And we'll have a good time.
Yep. Hopefully the Rockets are at home. So, and also got to thank our friends with Mercer County and Sherrard and Orion, whose season's wrapped up last night. Mercer County interim coach Jason Kenny was absolutely awesome to work with. I thought he did such a great job the last 2 weeks.
Considering everything that went on the last 2 weeks.
So thank you, Coach Kenny, for your help. And thank you to Coach Johnston at Sherrard and Coach Filler at Orion, who were both always awesome, amazing, so accommodating and great to work with. So thanks to them for helping us out through 9 weeks of the season. Appreciate all of their help and the relationships that we've built with them. It's always fun talking with them each week. So thanks to those guys.
Yeah, and again, to kind of circle back, when you were telling the story about Coach Kenny and, you know, talking about those seniors last night on the post game, I thought was awesome, where he really devoted some significant time to each senior. So I thought that was a class move and kind of a great way to finish the Mercer County campaign.
Isn't it crazy? It's the regular season's over already. I can't believe it. I mean, it's just 9 weeks just fly by. That's what we were talking about in the second half of our broadcast last night when I kind of got out of hand with Mercer County and Mendota. It's like me and Monty and Rusty, we just were like, man, I can't believe that we've been through 9 weeks already, because it feels like that week one game at Monmouth Roseville was just like last week. I mean, it's just, man, it's crazy how it flies by.
Yeah, and that's the interesting thing about football in terms of how the schedule is set up. You know, there's more practices than games, and that's really about the kind of, you know, basically the only sport anymore where that really proves true, because there are so many games played in other sports, and I'm talking about, you know, travel, segueing into interscholastic athletics. You know, for the most part, you know, maybe you get if you don't get in the playoffs, you get a max of 38 football games you'll play in your career, and if you're fortunate, maybe you'll get a couple of weeks in the postseason, so you don't get a lot of chances, and again, the season does go fast when you take it week by week. But like you said, the station has been doing it since 1979 when it first signed on, and you know, as I mentioned at the start of the broadcast, we've been doing a playoff show since 1991. You know, and I'd say in the 2000s is when it really became a big deal with, you know, kind of the IHSA television involved, but a lot of radio stations were really there at the ground level doing it in the early 90s.
Yeah, I'm excited for tonight. Like I said in our opening segment, it's always kind of my favorite night of the year, like, of work. I think it's the most fun night of, like, the IHSA sports calendar. I'm excited to kind of see how it all shakes out and everything. So, yeah, like we said, we'll be on the air at 7 tonight. The playoff brackets will come out in the 8 p.m. hour, and again, the people who will join us will on our, like, panel, I guess we can, a panel of experts, me and you, and then Pat Lower, the Fulton High School head football coach, also my uncle, he'll be here tonight. And if it works out, having Rockridge playing Eastland Pearl City, he'll be a great resource for that, because he, you know, plays them every year in the NUIC. So he'll be on, and then Monty Smith will be on with us as well. We will talk with Rockridge's head coach Sam Graves. We'll talk with the opponent, Rockridge's opponent's head coach as well. We'll have all the Three Rivers Athletic Conference advancing coaches on as well. So that'll be Kewaunee, Princeton, Monmouth, Roseville, Newman Central Catholic, and Erie Provincetown. I think we're going to talk with Ridgewood head coach Pat Elder tonight as well. So we'll also talk 8-man football this evening as well with the Ridgewood Spartans, 8-1 going into the postseason. Should be a potential for a nice deep run for them, but yeah, it's like I said, 9 weeks in the books, pretty crazy. We're into week 10 now, looking ahead to next week.
All right, back on tonight at 7 o'clock. We have Illini football, 1:30 pregame, and a 2:30 kickoff from Eugene, Oregon, where Illinois takes on the number one ranked Oregon Ducks on this afternoon. And win that game, can think about maybe playing in the Big Ten title game in December.
Well, one more thing I want to mention about just our high school football coverage this year. We got a really nice note card sent from Peyton Seedam's mom, Shannon, just thanking us for our coverage this season, which is really nice. I wanted to mention that. That always means a lot when people who listen and enjoy our coverage send stuff in like that. So thank you to her and their family. And like I said, it was a joy covering those Mercer County kids this year. It was a lot of fun last night with how they're able to end the season on a positive note. So that was fun to see. And then also this week I ran into Andrea Cooper, Mercer County's principal, at a volleyball game. And she had really nice things to say about our coverage. And she thanked me for shouting her out last week because I said, I guess, some nice things about her. She's awesome. And then her son actually is the ball boy for Orion, if you didn't know.
Oh, I remember you telling me that,
Which I like. That's kind of a nice connection. And then Mercer County's new superintendent, Tim Forker, stopped during a commercial break last night and told us thanks for the coverage of the school district and the program and everything. So that was much appreciated. He had a New York Yankees hat on.
And he got
night.
Mad
Yankees
later in the night.
Yeah, and then he was mad leaving probably. So, yeah.
All right.
It was fun, and it's always nice hearing from people like that. And been a fun year, and hopefully we get a few more weeks, five more weeks, right, of football before we turn the page to the winter.
And Tab Ballmer walked in the bank. He was listening to Sportsline on his earbuds when I got the takeout order.
Of course he was.
And then another update. I waved to the Mercer County Fair Queen pageant coordinator, Lidith Whitehall,
Lidith.
Who was in downtown Oledo as well. So, all right. So back at it, 7 o'clock. We'll take a little rest here, listen to Illini football in the 2:30, again, 2:30 kickoff or 2:38, whatever it is, from Oregon. And then in 7 o'clock airtime tonight for the Pigskin playoff preview. And then with the Rockets, next weekend, either Friday night or Saturday afternoon, you said the IHSA wants, a lot of schools to really consider playing Friday night this year.
That's what I heard. They kind of said something out saying that it's been well documented, the official shortages. They're hoping that some teams try to play Friday night, first round games especially. So I guess we'll see if any of the local schools end up playing on Friday night. Before we wrap up, I like that. I like a Friday night first round game. I think that's kind of a fun vibe. What about you?
Either way for me, really, I can work. I know a lot of people are just set with Saturday afternoon, but I can, live with Friday night. The way the weather's been this year, my goodness, the Friday night weather's been perfect.
So, and then real quick, Dustin Murray, Mercer County's AD, just sent us a text thanking us for our coverage of the Golden Eagles throughout the fall. We can't wait for the winter and the spring, too. Softball season, right, with Coach Murray and the Golden Eagles.
Be here before you know it.
So, all right. Well, I guess we need to, take a nap or something before we get to 7 o'clock tonight. I'm excited, though, for the Pigskin Playoff Preview. Hope everyone listening can join us tonight. Always a fun 3+ probably hours of high school football coverage and joking around and everything. It's just a fun night. So I'm excited to get back here. And we're going to have food, too.
That's right.
Benny's Pizza and Sean Harkey are one of our great sponsors.
Right. All right. So that'll do it for Sportsline. Again, from the Dale Jones Auctioneer Studios in downtown Oledo. For Ty Taylor, Jim Taylor, WRMJ Sports.
This has been Sportsline on WRMJ and WRMJ.com. Brought to you by Diamond Ag, your local ag retail supplier built from your local specifications with locations in Oledo, Alexis, and Knoxville. Your local country financial representatives, Tracy Bigham, Jason Potter, and Brent Bigham, offering insurance for your life, health, home, farm, or business by 6140 Running Galesburg. Your spot for custom-fitted running and walking shoes, Hey Dude shoes, and Birkenstock sandals, plus Red Wing and Wolverine work boots. And by Dale Jones with Merit Auctions. If you have farmland or machinery to sell, call Dale at 309-299-6400. The preceding has been a presentation of WRMJ Sports, your high school sports voice of Western Illinois.